Expectations by Mark Evans. Volume 2, Chapter the 2nd, A Re-Kippered Life Smashed Some More.
Curse that wretch Sarquil. Can he not tell the time? Does he not know how to use a watch or a clock? Why does he not hire a time boy to follow him around and keep him punctual?
Do they even exist, sir?
Do not nitpick, Sir Well. If we constantly worried about whether things existed or not, where would that leave the cucumber trumpet?
Perhaps that is him now, sir.
I feel a strong desire to punch someone, so yes, it probably is.
Mr. and Mrs. Sourquill, sir.
Papa!
Dear pregnant daughter Lily.
Papa-in-law.
Sarquil, do not address me in so familiar a fashion.
Forgive me, Sir Philip-in-law.
And why are you late?
The whole of London is at a standstill. Alas, Queen Victoria has become stuck in the middle of Oxford Street due to her enormous width.
God bless our squat monarch.
Oh.
Dearest, are you all right?
Oh, it is simply pregnancy sickness. The doctors have prescribed me a little something for the condition. I will be quite well once I have had some brandy and had a good suck on my pipe. Ah.
And later on, I shall rub you down with chicken fat and shout at you in Latin.
Oh, that would be soothing.
Modern medicine baffles me. But let us continue with my story.
Just as soon as I've set up my equipment.
Another cretinous device?
In recent weeks, the Times has been losing stories because our rivals have been intercepting and copying them. To that end, we now write in a special code.
What special code?
I shall be using horse code.
You mean Morse code?
No. Horse code. And here is the horse. On one side is written the standard alphabet, yet if we turn the horse round... Come on, Bletchley, walk on. We see a random jumble of letters with which we can transcribe our message into an unbreakable code. The Times has an identically coded decoding horse code horse to translate it back. For example, I wish to write your name, Sir Philip. I find the letter S, I turn the horse around, walk on, come on. I find its counterpart on the other flank, that is an H. I turn the horse back around, walk on, Bletchley, walk on. I find the next letter, I. Now, I rotate the horse back around.
Stop. Why do you need a horse at all? Why not write the code on a piece of paper?
Ah, a horse is conveniently self-propelled, whereas paper has to be carried. Oh, look out! The turning has made the horse dizzy. It's been sick. It has fallen over.
Enough of your equine idiocy. I will tell my story, and you will listen, and that is an end to it. Understand?
Yes, Sir Philip.
I continue. Now, last time, I told how my evil ex-guardian, Mr. Gently Benevolent, had returned from the dead to turn my life upside down again. He had not only killed my old friend, Mr. Parsimonious, he had also stolen St. Lovely's, the school I had founded, where my best friend, Harry Biscuit's 23 sons, were all pupils.
No! Mr. Parsimonious is dead.
My boys have been taken by an Evilton.
And we are stranded on the moors, miles from the nearest town.
Well, at least it's not raining, Pip-Ben. And it's raining, Pip-Ben.
We must find the school and rescue your children, Harry. But first, let us bury Mr. Parsimonious.
We have no shovels, so dug with our bare hands like a pair of bereaved moles. But we cared not, for this was our friend, Skinflint Parsimonious, ironically the most generous of men. But we had not been digging long when we were startled by a familiar voice.
Oh, how kind.
Mr. Parsimonious, how can this be?
There are only two options. Either he has become a ghost, or he has become some kind of ghost.
Indeed I have, Harry. And now I must give you gifts to thank you for burying my mortal remains. Oh, but what can I, a humble ghost, give? I know. Have these chains. And have this ectoplasm. Oh, you simply must have this whoa and this ah.
Oh, terrifying. You're a very good ghost.
Thank you. Oh, dear, is that mist coming near?
Yes.
Oh, but I am made of mist now. It will absorb me and I shall be no more. So I leave you now and... no, wait. There was something I was meant to tell you.
A warning from the afterlife.
Yes. So what was it? Buy more milk? No, it's not that.
Hurry, Mr. Parsimonious. The mist is coming closer.
You really ought to be jolly at Christmas. No.
The mist is here.
Goodbye, Pip-Pin. Goodbye, Harry Biscuit, and so I go. Wait! I got it! You must return to London and save Pippa. Mr. Benevolent means to take her captive. But the mist... why, it is surprisingly warm. It's full of other ghosts. Oh, I feel welcome. Wanted.
Wanted.
A glass of ghost sherry? Oh, yes, that would be lovely. So, tell me, how long have you been dead?
Goodbye, Mr. Parsimonious.
But he responded not. The mist absorbed him. We heard the chatter of the dead. The wind started to blow, gently at first, then stronger. The mist swirled until we were alone. Mr. Parsimonious was no more.
He is gone. He has left us dire warning.
Dire indeed. Buy more milk.
I mean the bit about Mr. Benevolent threatening Pippa.
Your sister.
And your wife, Harry.
Of course. I definitely hadn't forgotten that.
But as we hurried across the moor, little did Harry and I know that Mr. Parsimonious's prophecy was already being fulfilled.
Ah, how good it is to be alive again. Even if I was stitched together out of spare body parts and musical instruments. Curse my trumpet esophagus. Now, time for some evil. Once I picked up my nose and stuck it back on. Good evening.
Why, a sinister visitor with an upside-down nose.
I prefer it that way.
Pray, sir, tell me the nature of your visit.
Ah, Pippa Biscuit, nay Bin. I have returned from the grave, and now you shall tremble before me in terror.
Sorry, have we met?
Do you not remember?
Are you the little man who does the garden?
No.
Are you the big man who does the garden?
You're not thinking evilly enough.
Are you Naughty Simon, the thief?
Far more evil and depraved than that.
Are you Dirty Simon, the pervert?
Oh! How hard can it be? I persecuted you throughout your childhood and adolescence. I was the bane of your existence. I tried to destroy you and your family, but instead I was banished to the dread kingdom of death, cold and full only of the echoing shrieks of souls in torment. It was a lot like Bournemouth.
So gently benevolent, how have you returned from the dead?
By means of electricity.
Of course, the modern panacea.
Enough, small talk. For I plan to take you away and hold you captive, the better to taunt your dreadful brother, Pip-Bin.
Unhand me, you scoundrel!
No.
Then at least let me get a coat.
Never, even though it's drizzly out. That's how evil I am.
Meanwhile, Harry and I, unaware of these events, had hastened across the moors until we reached the remote village of Muchmore on the Moor by the Moory Moory Moor Moor.
And we have arrived just in time. It is about to rain again.
No, that was my stomach.
We must hasten to this coaching inn.
For a massive lunch.
To get a coach to London to rescue Pippa.
Of course, I meant that.
We entered the coaching inn and approached the bar, behind which stood the landlady. She was huge, fully twice the size of a normal woman. So big that the pint pot in her hands looked like a half-pint pot. Until I looked closer and realized she was a normal-sized woman and it really was a half-pint pot.
Help you, gentlemen.
We seek the fastest possible lunch to London.
Coach!
Those as ask for help round these parts, boys a drink first. Would you be liking a drink?
I am be liking a drink. I'll take a flagon of porter.
And for you, sir, perhaps a schooner of ale.
We don't have time for a schooner. I'll have a yacht of sherry.
Of course.
And could we see a menu?
No, Harry.
Bring in the menu.
That is your menu?
People round here don't read too well.
Well, I'll have the beef.
How do you want it, sir?
Dead, please.
Now, when does the next coach leave?
Why would I know about that?
Well, this is a coaching inn.
You're not that sort of coaching inn. We're a coaching inn in the sense of a training, instructing or teaching inn. That sort of coaching.
I see.
A point, a play and a vocational qualification. That's our motto.
So, how are we to get to London?
I might know someone who could help for the right price.
Which is?
8 shillings, farthing, halfpenny, and a little dance from you both.
How about we call it 9 shillings, half a crown, tuppence, and no little dance?
Done.
Thank you, rough country woman.
A pleasure, smooth town man. Now turn your glance to the corner of the room. Do you see yonder figure?
The silent, brooding figure?
No.
The hunched, glaring figure?
No.
The sinister, shadowy figure?
That's the one.
Ah, yes, the one sitting beneath the brightly painted sign saying, London, get your trips to London here.
Let us approach him. Sir?
So you two gentlemen need to get to London.
We do.
Very well, follow me.
But I haven't had my beef yet.
We followed him outside and down the road before he suddenly diverted his course through a hedge and up a small hill.
Why are we leaving the road?
Roads. Where we are going, we don't need roads.
Why not?
Behold, my recently completed lovely super-smashing Great Western Railway. At this he turns towards us, and for the first time I got a good look at his face. It looked strangely familiar.
Excuse me, but you aren't by any chance related to Professor Francis Sternbeater, whom we recently killed? Because you look just like him.
Oh, no, not at all, for my name is Bernstieter. Emmett Bernstieter.
Thank heavens, because the Sternbeater family have sworn vengeance on me for killing their cousins, the Hearththrashers. And they're also allied to my arch-enemy, Mr. Gently Benevolent.
Well, no need to worry. I'm not a Sternbeater, and I've never heard of this wonderful, charismatic, determined genius you call Mr. Gently Benevolent. You're safe with me, Pip-Bin.
Ah, you know my name.
Is that your name? What a lucky guess. We boarded the train, and as we took our seats, it pulled out of the station. Immediately, a man started loudly dictating a telegram.
I'm on the train, stop. I'm going into tunnel, so may, later, back, office, breaking up, stop.
We rolled along at speeds approaching quite fast, while Mr. Bernstieter explained all about the new railways. One day the whole of Britain will be covered with railways, so that one may safely travel anywhere without the inconvenience of walking or riding or hiring a mute-get-strong peasant to carry you.
What an innovative idea.
And it is so comfortable, more comfortable than all the other trains I've ever been on, which is none.
Of course, we're in first class. We have armchairs to recline in and individual servants and bottles of brandy to hand.
Are there different classes?
Indeed. Second class is slightly less luxurious. An understuffed sofa and beer you pour yourself and so on. Down to seventh class, where passengers have a metal spike to sit on and buckets of sand for refreshment. In eighth class, you're tied to a rope and dragged behind the train. In ninth, you're locked in a box on the station platform and someone shakes it and blows in coal smoke. And finally, there's tenth class, where you pay threepence and the chief stoker comes round to your home and hits you in the face with a shovel.
How splendid. I think poor people should very much like to be hit in the face with a shovel.
Alas, this noble service is expensive.
How so?
I'm afraid our work is seriously hampered by the legacy of the Great Landscaping Act.
Of course, before the Great Landscaping Act of 1784, Britain had been an entirely flat and rectangular country of land. King George III, in an extended fit of clinical mentalness, had decreed that it needed to be more interesting, and had hired the famous landscape gardener, Destroyability Brown, to add moors and swamps, hills and valleys, mountains and caves. And indeed, the work continues to this day, as the government plans to turn Birmingham into the beauty spot it should be by putting it under a lake.
While it may have made Britain beautiful, it has made it damnably hard to build a railway over.
And when shall we reach London?
Oh, quicker than you can say. Ama virumque cano troiae qui primus amor.
At which point he started to recite an epic Latin poem, which lasted exactly 3 seconds longer than the journey to London, which took 7 hours.
Fugit indignata. Oh, look, London. Sub umbras.
London! This is London! James here for rescuing relatives and challenging evil ex-guardians.
Harry and I leaped from the train and raced to rescue Pippa. But we were too late.
Gone!
But there is a note. Dear husband Harry and brother Pip,
I have been taken captive by Mr. Benevolent. Oh, help me, please help me. All love, your wife Pippa, or sister Pippa, depending on who is reading this.
Gosh, you sounded just like her.
Wait, there is more. P.S. have been taken to Peterborough.
You didn't sound anything like her that time.
Poor Pippa.
Nonsense, Pipbin. Peterborough has the most beautiful Norman cathedral in England.
But she has gone there with an evil villain who is unlikely to let her have a proper look round.
We must save her.
Perhaps Mr. Bernsteeter's railway will be able to take us there.
We hurried back to the train, but alas, there was a problem.
You see, there is no track to Peterborough. And a train without a track is like a mad, bedridden old woman with a musket. At best, aimless, at worst, incredibly dangerous. And neither of them is going anywhere.
Then Pippa is lost.
Not so fast, Pipbin, for I have an idea. In fact, I have 3 ideas. The first is swans. The second is we find a new transportation device to get us to Peterborough, and I suggest a granite balloon.
Will that not be too heavy to float?
Yes, it will. But if we do manage to get it up in the air, it will be very, very quick at coming down again, which might come in handy.
And your third idea?
My third idea is, please, can we have some lunch?
Of course. We could lay some track for the train.
How long would that take?
My workers lay track fractionally quicker than my train can travel.
Do you use navvies?
No, no, my workmen are far rougher and tougher, for I use chavvies.
A fearsome people.
Hard-working and incredibly loyal. Alas, there is one problem. The expense.
I am one of the richest young men in Britain. I will pay.
What an unexpected turn of events. I shall set my chavvies to work immediately. Build, my beauties. Build.
They laid track at a phenomenal rate. The train followed fractionally behind them. But the route they chose puzzled me.
Why did we not go straight through that valley?
We needed a route that could take us through the orphanage, lay waste to the rare butterfly's habitat, and then go directly through that idyllic village, destroying every home in our path.
Why?
Progress.
That's all very well, but how is it progress that I missed my beef supper?
Though nervous for Pippa's safety, I settled back into my seat and admired the labourers as they worked. They used whatever raw materials they could get their hands on. Metal was melted for rails, and people were carefully lifted from their beds to become sleepers. And so we advanced to Peterborough.
Nice station. It looks familiar.
It does, but I can't think why. Now, to rescue Pippa.
Would Mr. Pipbin recently arrive from London, please look on the ground where there is a note for him.
A note? It is from Mr. Benevolent. Dear Pipbin, sorry you missed us.
Oh, that doesn't sound anything like him. Let me read it out. We have gone on to Newcastle by Grantham,
Newark, Doncaster, York, Darlington and Durham. Catch me if you can. Yours evilly, Mr. Gently Benevolent.
Oh, and there's a P.S.
Mr. Bernsteeter, can your railways take us to Newcastle?
If the money is there.
Money is no object.
The tracks were laid and we soon arrived in Newcastle. But alas, once again, we were too late.
Another note, Pipbin. I shall read it. I am heading to Liverpool via Manchester.
Thence to Preston, Blackpool, Oxenholme and the Lakes. Carlisle, Glasgow Central, Edinburgh Waverley. Berwick-upon-Tweed, York again, and then on to Birmingham New Street, Birmingham International, Coventry, Bristol Parkway, Bristol Temple Meads, Taunton, Exeter and St. Austell.
That will be ruinously expensive for me.
But we must rescue Pippa. So I can finally get to eat.
Even if it cost me my last penny, we must rescue her.
At vast expense, the line was extended to all the places mentioned. Each station was oddly familiar, and at every one, Benevolent remained a step ahead of us. We pursued him relentlessly, leaving behind us the great scar of progress and thousands of exhausted labourers. Of course, by exhausted, I mean dead. Until finally...
Again, we miss him. There is another note. Dear Pip-Bin, I am heading for
Land's End, where I intend to dispose of your sister at 8 o'clock tonight. Yours feeling really, really evil. Gently benevolent.
But that is terrible. Although you really caught the voice that time.
At least we know he has no further to go. He has run out of Britain. Mr. Bernsteeter, can we get to Land's End by 8 o'clock?
If you pay me.
Oh, yes, of course. How much?
Well, let's see. Call it 100,000.
If it saves my sister and nephews, it is cheap at twice the price.
All right, 200,000 it is.
It turns out I'm down to my last £250,000 note. Do you have change for that?
Did I mention the £50,000 service charge?
Well, that works out nicely then.
We were making good progress as we entered a freshly constructed tunnel.
This tunnel smells delicious.
That is because it is made of beef reinforced with pre-stressed pastry.
It is a beef Wellington tunnel.
Our engineers use what they can. This tunnel ran past a field of cows, a river, and a flour mill. Beef Wellington was the natural choice for construction.
Oh, delicious beef. Just a little lick of the side of the tunnel.
Harry, no!
Oh, no! That's just sharpened my appetite.
Alas, your friend licking the side of the tunnel made the pastry soggy. Then his rumbling stomach caused a beef in.
We disembarked and went to investigate. The news was not good.
The roof has completely collapsed, and now there is the wrong sort of beef on the line.
How so?
It is stewing steak. The only way to dispose of it will be to surround it with carrots and onions, heat the tunnel to about 150 degrees, and then let it simmer over a period of 3 to 4 hours. Only then will it be tender enough for us to get through.
We will not get there in time. Oh. Harry, this is no time to eat.
But it is. This is not all stewing steak. I believe I have struck a seam of deliciously tender sirloin. Pip-Bin, I licked us into this crisis, but I can chew us out. Now, praise God and pass the horseradish.
Harry bravely ate his way through several cubic yards of raw beef.
I am through.
Then let us get back on board and save Pippa and the boys.
Yes, although... I don't think I can stand up. Oh, I'm sleepy. So sleepy. I need a small beef nap. Save Pippa for me, would you, Pip-Bin?
I shall, Harry Biscuit, and I shall return to rescue you.
Leaving Harry in a deep beef sleep, the train proceeded to Land's End. I would have to tackle Mr. Benevolent alone. As the train came to a halt, I leapt out, ready for the fray. When I heard a familiar voice.
Pip-Bin, how nice to see you again, for it gives me an opportunity to kill you.
He pushed me back inside the carriage.
And thank you for bringing him to me, Emmett Sternmeter.
My pleasure.
But you said you were called Emmett Bernsteeter.
A subterfuge.
And what a cunning one. I had no idea. Literally none.
Your simple human brain cannot cope with my brilliance.
And thanks to your money and this so-called chase, we now have a railway network the length and breadth of Britain.
How could you be so evil?
Now let us get this train moving.
And where is my sister? Where is my school?
Did you not recognize it at every stop you made?
The stations?
All made from pieces of your ridiculous and lovely.
That is why they seem so familiar. And the boys?
They're safe. Indeed, safe and happily being educated in my evil school of evil. As for your sister, have you met my luggage?
He indicated a large, pepper-sized trunk.
Let me out of this trunk! Ah, dear Brother Pip, thank goodness you are here. Mr. Benevolent has been most cruel. I have been coatless for these past weeks, and he wouldn't even let me look around the cathedral in Peterborough.
Silence! Now my vengeance begins. Now I take the first steps in my redemption. Now my nose. My damn nose has fallen off again. Help me find it, Sturmbeater.
Quick, while they're searching for his nose.
We opened a window and climbed onto the carriage roof. But it was only a matter of seconds before Benevolent and Sternbeater joined us.
Dear brother, we are trapped.
Nowhere to run.
Nowhere to hide.
Then I must fight. By the way, your nose is on upside down.
He prefers it that way.
Come on, Malevolent. Fists up.
On the contrary, swords up. Have at you.
Ow! Just a flesh wound.
Then have at you again.
Ow!
Again I wound you.
No, again it is a flesh wound. A deep flesh wound, reaching through the flesh and into the vital organs beneath, but a flesh wound nonetheless.
Have courage, brave brother. Surely soon his sword will wear out from stabbing you, and then he shall be at your mercy.
Look at you, Pip-Ben. You're half dead, and now I shall let Sternbeater avenge his cousins by completing the job.
Benevolent grabbed Pippa. Sternbeater approached and grappled me onto the roof of the locomotive itself.
Ah, I have the upper hand now. And the lower elbow.
Let go of my hand and elbow, you villain.
And then I saw something. We were racing back towards the collapsed Beef Wellington tunnel. By the side of the track was a collapsed Harry Biscuit. And there, on the line, was Harry's empty jar of horseradish sauce. The engine struck the condiment and instantly derailed. The carriages behind were ripped from their couplings, and Sternbeater and I were alone on the locomotive and hurtling inexorably towards a cliff.
Oh, not a cliff!
And Sternbeater and I were over the edge of the cliff, and all I could do was fall, fall, fall to my inevitable death.
My goodness!
What a cliffhanger ending!
Alas, this was more of a cliff plummeter ending.
What happened?
Did you suddenly learn how to fly?
No.
Did a passing sparrow catch you?
No.
Did you die and are now actually a ghost?
No.
Oh, I bet you are a ghost. I bet I could put my hand right through your face.
Idiot.
No, I cannot.
Come, dear husband. Let us leave my poor dear father to nurse his poked eye.
Dear Lily, farewell. Sark will go away. And when you return next week, you shall learn of how I escaped the most perilous of situations and discovered both kindness and horror, the like of which I never imagined.
Bleak Expectations is written by Mark Evans and starred Richard Johnson as a Philip Bin, Tom Allen as Young Pip, Anthony Head as Mr. Benevolent, Lawrence Howard as Mr. Parsimonious, Jeffrey Whitehead as Sternbeater, Susie Kane as Pippa, Sarah Hadland as Lily, James Barkman as Harry Biscuit, and Mark Evans as Sundry Workman and Gentleman. It was produced by Gareth Edwards.